Welcome to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, and in the next hour, we'll focus on mindfulness, bringing our awareness to the present moment without judgment. Developing and deepening our capacity for mindfulness throughout our daily life is essential for reducing fearful and negative thinking, for letting go of the stories we tell ourselves that keep us stuck in place, and for transforming our relationship to ourself, to others, to the world. Join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I really appreciate you joining me today. So the show's purpose, of course, is to be a space where you can bring your attention and awareness to the present moment, and I hope give yourself time to relax into the moment and allow yourself to find places in our topic today that resonate with your experience, because I think that that's one strategy for becoming a student of our own mind, is to really listen and to say, where is that true for me as well? Where do I find myself struggling with some of those same practices, those same issues that get in the way of me being mindful in my daily life? And of course, my topics are designed to support people on their mindfulness journey. So mindfulness, bringing our attention and awareness to the present moment without judgment, sounds simple, hard to put into practice in daily life, but worth doing. And why is that? Well, I think it's because mindfulness for me has brought greater inner peace. And that's what we say about mindfulness in general, is that that is the aim, is internal peace. And that's important because if I'm not at peace with myself, I'm not a force for peace in the world. And being a force for peace in the world seems to me more than ever an important aspiration for all of us to share. So I am happy today to report on what is a beautiful sunny day in the Pacific Northwest that since we last spoke last week, I was able to get my first vaccine for the COVID virus. I had the Moderna vaccine over the weekend. A local community college sponsored a drive-through event. It was incredibly well organized, and we were probably in line, kind of driving through, snaking through the campus for about 45 minutes to an hour. But people all along the way, cheerful, helpful, and so many. I mean, I think logistics are interesting. So my partner and I were talking about what must it take to put this together. Reminded me of why public health is such a critical infrastructure, I would say, component of our system, that to be able to mobilize that many people in that short time span over that time period. So I was one of, on Saturday, across the nation, 4 million people who received the vaccine. I would say I felt a little bit icky the next day, but honestly, it could have been something I ate. And I'm looking forward to getting my second shot. That'll be on May 1st. I'm grateful also that my partner is now soon to be eligible, and we believe she'll have her shots completed by June. So now I've mentioned before that I'm relatively new to Facebook, and therefore discovering things that the rest of you probably observed years ago. So here's what happened in the last couple of days looking at Facebook. One of my friends, and I kind of put that in quotation marks because honestly, this is somebody I barely know, but you know, friends of friends. I was new to Facebook. He put out a friend request. I had no reason to say no. So I said yes. And he's a guy who puts out a lot of political commentary, which actually does not narrow the field at all. Almost everybody on my timeline talks a lot about politics. But I tend to, as I've said before, to be in a bubble in my life. And particularly, I think I noticed it on Facebook. So I mostly agree with what John says. And he does, however, not exist in the same kind of bubble that I do. And I found this out when he posted a pro-vaccine, pro-mask, pro-government intervention piece on his Facebook timeline. And wow, did he get hammered. People, none of whose names I recognized. So I don't know the people in that part of his world, but they were really furious with him. And they accused him of being a communist. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that certainly was a pejorative from their perspective. They accused him of being, you know, just a sheep following power mad politicians who are trying to take away freedom. They disputed the efficacy of the vaccines. They disputed the value of wearing masks. They see the whole thing as, which is to say, the COVID experience and that we're having the pandemic as simply an effort by the government, sort of an excuse to overreach, to invade our lives in hideous, ugly ways. So I really was, I was amazed kind of at the intensity of the responses. And of course, that is because I live in a bubble. And in my bubble, I read about people with these kinds of views. I mean, I know people out there with have those kinds of views, but I read about them from the safety of my phone in a national newspaper story, right? I don't have direct contact with people who have that kind of intense, negative, conspiracy-oriented view about these issues. And maybe that's why the vehemence kind of surprised me. So what did it mean to me to bring a mindfulness practice to that moment of reading these comments? The first thing I noticed was my immediate kicking in of wanting to gather all of my arguments to refute their claims. And in fact, it's actually a little bit of a challenge for me not to tell you right now sort of three things that people said that were particularly easily disputed, I would argue. But that's not my purpose. But really, it's that desire to dispute and refute is right there on the surface. And to do so with a kind of force, maybe sarcasm, et cetera, which is kind of one of the things I noticed about my friend, which is his in his engaging people in these commentaries, maybe there's a way in which he's egging them on because he's pretty forceful in his comments back. He doesn't quite engage in as much name calling, but he doesn't, he's not super polite about it either. Nor is he bringing what I, a lot of what looks like compassion or loving kindness to the situation, but that's okay. It's his way. So I'm noticing my mindfulness. So first it's the desire to dispute and then, and the gathering of those arguments. And then I really start to focus on the feelings. Not so much my feelings, but I really, the anger and fear in the comments, the distrust and the fear, the hopelessness and the fear. It was helpful to really notice those feelings that people were expressing because it reminded me of something. It reminded me of how I felt last summer. There was, if you'll recall, in the summer, especially late summer, an enormous amount of progress being made on vaccine research. And yet, if you had asked me at that time if I planned to get the vaccine, I would have told you I had no intention of taking it. I didn't, and yet 5 days ago I did. I didn't trust the Trump administration. And I was concerned that they had speeded up the research process and that they had done it not for the interests of public health and public safety, but to improve his election chances, to give money-making opportunities to corporations that were participating in the research, and that he had little regard, and that they, the pharmaceutical companies that engaged in this, had little regard for the common good or the common person. But again, on Saturday, I, with few qualms, in fact, I took the vaccine. Would I have done that if Donald Trump had won the election? I don't know. I genuinely don't know if I would have ever, what it would have taken for me to overcome the qualms, the distrust, the kind of feeling of hopelessness in the sense of, oh, what is happening? I don't know who to trust. I don't know what to trust. And I'm angry that I can't trust this federal process to be acting in my best interests. And of course, there's really an edge of conspiracy thinking in that as well, isn't there? That I believed or was concerned that manufacturers, pharmaceutical companies, et cetera, were somehow being willfully ignorant and irresponsible. So I'm not equating my skepticism about the Trump administration's sincerity and concern for the general welfare with people who appear to be ignoring facts about transmission and severity and the efficacy of the vaccines. But I do think it's important for me to remember that I can bring some compassion to my response because I can say I too have been mistrustful and I can notice what was persuasive to me even in the face of that distrust. Certainly it was the result of the election, but it wasn't just that. That didn't flip a switch for me. There were other people, there was other information that I was able to listen to that was persuasive. And we know that that won't work for some people, right? That kind of compassionate response isn't necessarily going to flip a switch for somebody to let go of some of their anxieties and fears and listen to what we would call, and I believe is the the truth or the facts of the situation. But if I can find a place in my experience that allows me to relate to their fear, I might have a chance of making a connection, becoming in touch with my own experience of that same level or intensity of distrust, fear, and hopelessness. So today we're going to talk about what is at the root of some of this, or one maybe at the surface of this, which is fear, and particularly what the Buddhists call a kind of aversion response that we sometimes have in our lives. We want to talk about that because we want to talk about what to do about that. But first, let's breathe and then move on a little bit. So we're going to do the breathing exercise because I think, especially if you're talking about something like fear and hatred, it's good to be as calm as possible before you jump into that topic. So we're going to do the one where we bring our hands and our palms to heart center on an inhale. We're going to interlace our fingers and push our palms outward on an exhale. We're going to raise our hands above our head on an inhale and then let go on an exhale. And we're going to do that three times. And we put our attention to our breath to bring more peace, calm, attention, clarity into our bodies and minds. Okay, so inhale. Inhale. Third time. Thanks for joining me in that. A little good breathing. And so today we're talking about aversion, which is what the Buddhists call one of the three central kind of roots of blockage to insight. And so we're going to talk about how that arises in our life and what might help us to address it or manage it. So let's take our first break. And when we come back, keep talking about this idea of playing with matches. So you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll be right back after the break. Mindfulness, staying present to the moment without judgment. It sounds simple, but we know on a bad day it's tough to achieve. So here's a 2-minute drill you can use to enhance your capacity for mindfulness. Find an activity you do every day, like washing the dishes or brushing your teeth, and while you're doing it, focus on nothing else. Not your to-do list, not worries about the past, not rehearsing conversations, just the physical sensation of engaging in that activity. As we enhance our capacity for mindfulness in these ordinary activities, we're better able, when the going gets rough, to bring that capacity to bear, to be calm and authentic in those moments. If you'd like to learn more about how to enhance mindfulness in your life, contact me at mcguirelifecoach.com and listen to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, Thursdays at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern.
Your inspiration all day on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to let go of the I can'ts that are holding you down? Valerie Trujillo invites you to join her community on a mission to collectively heal as a tribe, where your vulnerability is heard and reciprocated. So tune in to Love and Light with the Crystal Blue Oracle every second and fourth Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Valerie and her work, visit CrystalBlueOracle.com.
Are you searching? Looking for a sign? A message you need to hear? From the great unknown? From the most mysterious place that is the most familiar to your soul and the depths of who you are? The universe put someone here to talk to, someone God gave a blessing to that you may find insight with. TheAngelLady.net. 1-800-323-1790.
Did you know that when we talk about the Earth's ecosystems, the most important ecosystem has been left out? you, we created the ecosystem approach to recapture human potential.
Find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Join us every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Ecosystem Approach Show with Jason and Patricia on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I'm so glad you joined me today to talk about aversion. Doesn't that sound fun? But it's one of what the Buddhists call the three root hindrances to insight. And so that, to me, is enough reason to talk about it. So I want to start with a story of something that a friend and I were talking about recently. I was sorry to learn that she is experiencing in her life a great deal of suffering because of the challenges her husband is facing at work. He's one of those people who has kind of a high profile job, and not surprising in this day and age, or any day and age, when you have a high profile job, it often comes with a fair amount of criticism. And it's gotten worse lately for him, and specifically, people who had once been supportive are either deserting him or are really joining that chorus of voices complaining about his decisions. And it's a tight community. So some of those people are not exactly my friend's close friends, but they are or were friendly acquaintances. So she's really feeling this situation very deeply. There's a sense of loss because these friendships now and relationships seem very damaged to her. And she uses words like betrayal to describe their actions. And I think betrayal is a really strong word. So she's feeling very angry and very hurt. And in the course of our conversation, I was interested to hear that her husband actually has developed a very calm and accepting attitude about the situation. He tells her that he's doing the best he can to do his job to the best of his ability, to act with integrity. And he really is coming to accept in a deeper way that people have a right to their opinion. I mean, he might have known that intellectually, but he's trying to, you know, kind of bring that knowledge into his whole body experience to say, people, given the work that I do, people are going to disagree with me, and that's okay. And of course, he hopes that they'll come to understand and agree with him eventually, but he accepts that they might not. And I'm really impressed with the depth of his equanimity that he's developed around this. But I can also really relate to my friend's experience because my partner has a job that comes with a fair amount of criticism. And in fact, I joked with my friend that it's as if my partner and her husband are driving motorcycles, right? They're determining the path they take, and she and I are in the sidecar. We can't help but come along for the ride. It feels like they have a windshield in front of them that's keeping the bugs at bay. But for the two of us, they're just coming right at us, and we're not really in a position to bat them away. She's not going to stand up to the people criticizing her husband and shout at them and tell them they're wrong as much as she'd like to and probably fantasizes about it. And I'll be honest, I've done that once or twice myself. But luckily also, I've been at this a little bit longer and developed, a greater capacity for equanimity. And my friend's still working on it. She knows she wants to get into the witness seat when that anger and hurt arises. But she said to me, you know, sometimes it's like when you strike a match. It just happens so fast. And I know what she means. And I'll bet you know what she means, too. Because I think for each of us, there are feelings that arise so quickly and with so much intensity that it can feel impossible to find even a microsecond to pause before those feelings have overtaken us. So that's what we want to keep talking about then. What is the match that can be struck in your life? I think for some of us, and we can tease this out a little bit, it's that sense of, is there a cause? Like, what kind of circumstances happen that you notice then the match gets struck? And what are the feelings sometimes? So it's not always anger, I think, although that's probably the closest one that we think about with that metaphor of lighting a fire. But for me, I think defensiveness is always right beneath the surface, very accessible to me. I can get into a defensive posture faster than almost anybody I know. I'm not joking about it, but I'm not proud of it, but I'm also not ashamed of it. It is simply the truth of my experience, is that I reach defensiveness very quickly. So what is it for you? Maybe it's shame. Is shame always kind of riding right there below the surface? Is it hatred? Is it anger? Whatever, all of those kinds of negative emotions we want to be thinking about in this context of this conversation. You know, the comparison with the match is an interesting one, and my friend and I talked about this. You know, she brought this up, and she said, you know, does the comparison with the match really work? And it does at that initial phase for her, kind of the striking of the match, the feelings arising so quickly that it's hard for her to find enough space to move into a witness seat, to observe her reactions rather than being overtaken by them. But, you know, matches burn out quickly. And so that's when she said, I'm not sure that that part of the comparison really works. And I asked her, right, is that an accurate comparison? When these feelings arise, do they dissipate almost as quickly as they appeared? And unfortunately, the answer was no. And I would say that's true for me too. Those kinds of negative feelings can smolder and they can reignite. I can feel almost as bad thinking about an upsetting situation, right, remembering it, as I did in the situation itself. And to be frank, sometimes I might even feel worse, because in the reviewing of the situation, I now have the time to add to the injury, right? I can remember all of the other times that something similar happened. I can allow my inner critic to deliver a long, detailed soliloquy cataloging my faults and failures and other people's treachery and unkindness. So this experience of aversion may start up and rise up very, very quickly, but it won't necessarily pass as easily. So aversion, this one of the three roots of hindrance, the root hindrances to insight. So the one is aversion, one is grasping or holding on to something for dear life till you choke the life out of it. And the other is delusion, feeling lost in confusion and uncertainty. But today I'm going to focus on aversion. So aversion is strong feelings of dislike, and it's also a kind of a turning away or a pushing away that we often express through anger or hatred, but not just that. So when I think about these emotions that strike up very quickly, even defensiveness, I am also, I think, you know, that defending, right? I am also kind of pushing away and, you know, think about, what is it that I'm pushing away? What is it that I'm turning away from when that's happening? So we tend to talk about experiences where we feel aversion as something that happens to us. We can very easily kind of point to what was the external thing that led me to feel this way. And if you think about even the way we talk about this, you know, we say to people, you make me so angry, right? It's so frustrating to deal with you. You are such a pain in my backside, right? But really that bottom line of, you make me angry, right? Or even the situation, we think we're being very noble. It's the situation that makes me angry. But again, we're really pointing to something external to us. But Jack Kornfield reminds us that he says, however painful our experiences may be, they are just painful experiences until we add the response of aversion or hatred. It goes on, only then does suffering arise. If we react with anger, hatred, aversion, these qualities become habitual. Like a distorted autoimmune response, our misguided reaction does not protect us. Rather, it becomes the cause of our continued unhappiness. So let's slow down with that for a second. And we've talked before in other shows about the difference between kind of pain and suffering, that pain is inevitable, suffering is a choice. And I think choice is not a great word there. Optional is maybe another way that quote goes. But to say that, but to really try to make that distinction and to understand and start to really notice in our daily lives that the inevitability of pain, right? It's inevitable that when someone criticizes somebody I love, I'm going to see the pain in that experience, right? I'm going to see my partner's pain, perhaps, and I'm going to feel pain myself. I don't like it when people criticize her. I don't like to see her sad or hurt, right? Pain, absolutely. But then I want to think about, what do I then bring to that, right? What story do I bring to that? And especially that experience of aversion, right? My defenses come up, right? The argument comes up. And what, unfortunately, I think is often tied to that, and I think my friend was noticing this too, is now I'm in that place of sort of diminishing or demeaning the other person because I am angry. And because that's how I kind of push them away, I diminish them, I turn away from whatever it is they're saying, and I'm placing my pain and hurt really on that other person. And that's then becomes, moves from the pain of the initial experience, somebody criticizes somebody I love, to the suffering of, this is unfair, this person is wrong, this person is has an opinion that shouldn't be listened to or given credence, etc. So I bring that then to it. And as he says, though, and this is for me what's really super important, is that it becomes habitual. Right, that the experience of responding to pain through with aversion, hatred, right, dislike, anger, then becomes our go-to, our fallback, our default position of, when something brings me pain, my response is aversion. And that's not only kind of keeps us from insight, but it can be more than that too. So Buddhist psychologist Sharon Salzberg writes about these three hindrances to insight. And she says that the mind that really at the root of these, all three of these, but specifically in this case, aversion, is the mind gets in the way of itself. And it has to do with misplaced or distorted trust. She explains that when we experience aversion, we trust that getting angry is the response that will make us stronger. She says, we trust that getting angry when we, in that painful moment, is the response that will make us stronger. And I thought of my friend, right? And the sense that being angry at those who criticize her husband, or my experience, being angry at somebody who criticizes my partner, makes me stronger, right? Makes me better able to shield myself from those criticisms. And we've often talked, kind of using Michael Singer's work, about how being mindless in our activities, failing to really bring to mindfulness practices to bear, is one of the ways we do that, is we put a shield over ourselves. We try to protect ourselves fully from external forces. And, you know, the challenge of that is now we're trapped inside with ourselves, right? Because, right, going back to cornfield, it's not what the other person did. That may have been the source of pain, but the suffering that comes along with it, that's the stories I'm bringing to the situation. That's my hatred. That's my turning away and having to demean and diminish the other person. That somehow that, I believe, I trust, is going to make me stronger and better able to deal with the pain of the criticism itself. So it also then is shielding me. And what is it shielding me from? The truth of my own feelings. So that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. We're going to take our second break here. And when we come back, we're going to continue to talk about this issue of aversion and our response to difficult things, and what it shields us from in a way that is unhelpful and unproductive. So you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and I'll see you after the break. On a tough day, our first impulse is to check out. But here's a better idea. Check in. Check in with yourself in two specific ways. First, check in with your body. Are your hands balled into fists? Is your jaw clenched? Notice any place you feel tension in your body and consciously relax. Then check in with your mind. Are you fully present to the people and activities in your immediate environment? Or is your mind a million miles away, worrying about the future, brooding about the past? If that's the case, gently bring your awareness back to the present moment. When we check in with ourselves, we can create more peace in ourselves and in our world. If you'd like to learn more about incorporating mindfulness practices into your daily life, contact me, Mary Angela McGuire, at McGuireLifeCoach.com.
nothingbutnow.com and check out my show, Nothing But Now, Thursdays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio.
Get empowered on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The Finder of Lost Things, exploring your superpowers of trust, healing, and transformation with me, Hannah Belton. When my brother Christian went missing, I completely denied my grief. We can either transform and transition, or we can stay stagnant. This podcast will uncover the process that Christian and I went on to find the lost things, him, and to find the parts of me that were missing. And there's things that are missing in you that prevent you from letting go, whether it's a person, a dream, a lifestyle. That process of trusting and finding the lost pieces and integrating them, that's where you get your sustainable transition that will carry on. Tune in every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You can find me at hannahvelton.online.
Are you ready to look at the raw side of spirit? Have you lost someone too soon and their passing has left you with more questions than answers? If so, join Eye of Soul Radio with me, psychic medium Jamie. On this show, I leave nothing off limits as I discuss those who have passed under darker circumstances, guide those who may feel ashamed or shocked by a loved one's passing, and provide self-growth to get through the difficult times. Let's go through this together on my show, Eye of Soul Radio, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. So we've been talking about one of the three root hindrances to insight, according to the Buddhists, which is aversion. The other two are grasping and delusion, and I probably ought to do shows about that. But aversion probably sticks with me as the one I notice the most in my own life, because I have a tendency to be reactive rather than responsive. And one of those kind of things that I'm working on about myself is how can I shift from reactive to responsive? And so reactive for me is to think about what are those emotions, negative emotions in particular, that lie right below the surface, that something happens in the world and I immediately move into anger or defensiveness or even a feeling of shame, but something that's aversion in the sense of I have to push away and turn away from what that stimulus is. And, you know, as Jack Kornfield reminds us, the stimulus may be something that is painful, but the suffering comes when I bring my story to it, when I bring the anger, the defensiveness, the shame, et cetera, to that, when I have to turn away from the truth of the situation. So I've been talking about a friend of mine who, like me, has a partner in a job that gets a lot of criticism. And so we can both become angry very quickly in response to other people criticizing our partners. And we do that, Sharon Salzberger says, because we have this misguided idea that our anger will make us stronger. That we believe somehow that being angry at people who, say, criticize a loved one is going to shield us somehow from that criticism. And so I've been thinking about this, about what does that mean? That, and because I know from my reading and things that I have come to believe that putting that shield over ourselves, whatever that shield looks like, whether it's anger or withdrawal, that in itself is not the source of happiness. That is actually going to just further my suffering. So what is it I'm trying to shield myself from? And I think it's our own true feelings. If I think about this particular situation with my friend, one of the things she and I talk about is that idea that maybe we're in the sidecar of somebody else's life, that they're driving, we're in the sidecar, we're along for the ride. And maybe that's part of the truth about that we're avoiding in our anger, right? It's maybe not unreasonable to feel protective of a loved one, but I think there's something else going on below that, which is maybe our anxiety. Maybe we have questions about. Why have we ended up in a sidecar? Are we always in the sidecar? What does that mean, right? Does that somehow diminish me as a person? So we might bring our own anxieties to that that are fueling the anger and that have little to do with the person who's criticizing our loved one. But it also is there fear of the unknown? Do I worry, what if my partner gets criticized so much that she loses her job, right? Does then that kind of think of the kind of spiraling thought process that can come from that kind of fear or anxiety. Am I embarrassed that somebody I love is being criticized, right? In a somewhat public way. Like, what is the truth that I'm trying not to sit with, right? That I'm shielding myself from by being angry at somebody else, by experiencing and reacting with aversion, rather than looking inward to say, wow, what am I upset about? What am I uncomfortable with? And you know, this takes me back in some ways to this experience I had over the last couple of days of having the flu shot, or the COVID vaccine, and then also, although I did get a flu shot too, reading on a friend's Facebook page an incredible barrage of criticism about it. You know, I think when we experience aversion, we not only are trying to shield ourselves, but we're also trying to separate ourselves, and we're trying to really keep ourselves separate from whatever the criticism is, whatever the negativity is, but then we're all kind of lost in the negativity ourselves. Anyway, all of this reminded me of this very nice poem that I heard recently, and so I'm going to read it to you. And it's called Mud of the Moment. And the author, the poet, is also a yogi, and her name is, I think it's pronounced Dana Falds. I don't 100% know. I tried to Google it and didn't get very far. But here's this poem, really nice poem, I think, that she wrote called Mud of the Moment. Truth lives in the mud of this moment. It exists in the messy interplay of emotions and relationship, in the personality traits I'd rather leave behind. To experience truth doesn't take sainthood or dissolving my desires. It requires diving into the muck and mire of what's here, feeling the anxiety or fear, knowing the entirety of me without hiding from the shadows or the light. Choosing to be whole, awareness makes the leap to that, to see that I am truth. Choosing to be whole, awareness makes the leap to see that I am truth, always was and always will be. The radiant singularity, the infinite in human form, the lotus never blooms without sinking roots in the mud. The lotus never blooms without sinking roots in the mud. You know, when we talk about something like aversion and wanting to bring a mindfulness perspective to it, I think it can feel like just saying, hey, you ought to just be willing to get into the muck and the mire of those feelings. You ought to be willing to just look at them. And I do believe that. I mean, I think that that's, you know, one of the criticisms of mindfulness is kind of that it's about, oh, be happy all the time. And it's absolutely not. One of the strengths of it is really encouraging people to sit with those hard feelings, that discomfort, that uncertainty, that anxiety. And instead of experiencing aversion and sort of blaming others for what you're feeling, really take a truthful, awake, insightful, aware perspective on those feelings, but not so that you just get lost and pushed down into the muck and mire, but because the lotus never blooms without sinking roots in the mud. So our capacity to be truly awake in the world doesn't come from ignoring what is difficult and ignoring and just turning away from and putting a smile on or a happy face on difficult situations, but by facing it more directly to say, yeah, there are feelings here of fear or anxiety, and I want to know them more deeply, not so that I can dwell in them forever, but so that I can bloom out of them. So that would be my suggestion anyway. That's what I'm trying to do. And it's not easy, is it, for any of us? But it's a journey worth taking because we don't want to be unhappy for the rest of our lives, right? We were talking, Jacob, who's the fabulous producer for this show. He's just like an angel. And I really enjoyed getting to know him, and we talk a lot at the breaks. And one of the things we were just talking about is kind of the challenge of self-acceptance. To say, you know, for me to say, as I said earlier in the show, one of those aversion kind of responses that lies right below the surface for me is defensiveness, right? I hear criticism, I hear negativity, I'm ready to fight. And I'm not necessarily turning away, but I am angry. And I think the aversion is really, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to pay attention to what's happening inside. I just want to fight back. So what does that mean? Do I need to push that feeling away? Do I need to criticize myself for having that feeling? What does it mean to be accepting of that, to say, yeah, I'm a person who has that experience of defensiveness really easily, right? Really close to the surface. You might not be surprised when you see it, right? And to say, you know, it's, and I talk to clients about this all the time, and it's very difficult for people to hear, to imagine the possibility that I am enough just as I am, right? I am enough just as I am, even though just as I am includes, I'm really defensive, really close to the surface, and my defensiveness lives right there, right under the skin, right? And that's okay. Now, is it something I'm working on? Yeah, because I don't enjoy feeling defensive all the time, right? I don't, there's not happiness in that. There's actually suffering in that. So how can I want to be able to be accepting. Yep. That is a characteristic of who I am. It's something that I see the negative aspects of that. And I'm working on and using mindfulness practices so that I can be less defensive in my response to other people. And I can love myself, knowing that those two things are true, that I don't have to perceive myself as damaged or broken or incapable or undeserving of love, because that particular thing is true about me. In the whole big picture of all of these conversations about mindfulness, that's really at the heart of it, right? Is if I can bring a compassionate response to my own characteristics that I find less than desirable and that I am working on, but I can say truthfully and with kindness, yep, that is true of me. It may not always be true of me, but it's true of me right now. And yet I continue to believe that I am a valuable and worthy person and worthy of love. Go ahead, say that to yourself. Go ahead, just say it right now and see what happens. See, right? You get that kind of anxious, icky feeling inside, like that's not okay to say to yourself. Isn't that interesting? Doesn't that tell you a lot about what the heck is going on in our culture and our lives that we don't feel good about saying to ourselves, I'm okay just as I am. I'm enough just as I am. Wow. Worrisome. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk a little bit about a really particular practice we might engage in to increase and our capacity for mindfulness, so that when we get into situations like ones where we tend to react with aversion, that we can slow down and find the witness seat so that we can observe what's happening and not be carried away by those emotions. So you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll be right back after the break.
Mindfulness, staying present to the moment without judgment. It sounds simple, but we know on a bad day it's tough to achieve. So here's a 2-minute drill you can use to enhance your capacity for mindfulness. Find an activity you do every day, like washing the dishes or brushing your teeth, and while you're doing it, focus on nothing else. Not your to-do list, not worries about the past, not rehearsing conversations, just the physical sensation of engaging in that activity. As we enhance our capacity for mindfulness in these ordinary activities, we're better able, when the going gets rough, to bring that capacity to bear, to be calm and authentic in those moments. If you'd like to learn more about how to enhance mindfulness in your life, contact me at mcguirelifecoach.com and listen to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, Thursdays at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. Let the journey begin.
You're driven, and it totally shows. Your career is taking off, you're killing it in the mom game. But did your health needs make it on the plate this week? Tune in to the Boss Up Babe radio show, where Carissa Adkins helps babes show up, boss up, and thrive. Every second and fourth Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Become the boss babe you were meant to be. To sign up for one of Carissa's group coaching programs, visit 365DailyHustle.com.
Close your eyes and imagine what it would feel like to live a life driven by purpose and passion. Feels great, doesn't it? Tune in to Awareness to Action every first and third Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific with me, Joan Marlowe. I'm here to help you navigate your unique journey toward purpose while embracing your authenticity. Visit my website, peacefullyhealing.com, and don't miss Awareness to Action on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome to Blue Lightning Healing Meditations. I'm Susie Parker Goins. I'm a channel bringing through spirit guides in accessible and resonant ways for you to connect with your higher self, sharing soul-level conversations to help you in your spiritual path. I upload weekly channeled messages, interviews, and information on a variety of topics, sharing my learning and opening doors for growth. You can find a listing of upcoming podcasts at BlueLightningHealing.com. Until next time, blessings.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and today we're talking about that delightful, happy, upbeat subject, aversion. So one of what the Buddhists call the three hindrances to insight, the other two, grasping and delusion, and I think we'll be talking about those at a later date. So aversion is the kind of reaction we have where we turn away in a kind of rejecting way of something that's happening in our lives. We react with anger or hatred and I think even a kind of frustration or rejection of what's happening. I tend to react with defensiveness, I think, in that kind of situation. And we tend to really think about it as something that is caused by these bad feelings that we're having caused by something external. But that, you know, takes us right back to the Buddhist comment about pain being inevitable and suffering being optional. And so it's not so much that the external thing is causing suffering, it's causing pain. And we bring then our aversion and our stories and our habits of mind to that experience and make it worse, essentially. So we've been talking today about ways in which we do that and ways in which that is suffering. I think we could make other choices about suffering, but it's hard to do. It's very hard to do. And one of the reasons, and this is Sharon Salzberg's point about aversion, is that like the other two root hindrances, we tend to mistrust, put our trust in the wrong place. And we think, for instance, that anger, reacting to a situation with anger, protects us. And protects us, maybe in my case, from somebody criticizing somebody I love. But really, that protection then becomes a kind of shield. For first of all, that habit, it becomes a habit of always reacting to certain kinds of situations with aversion. That's problem number one. But the second thing is, when we react with aversion, we put this protective shield of anger around us, something is missing. There's a famous quote that I'm not going to get 100% right from James Baldwin, where he says, you know, when the anger goes away, what we're left with are our true feelings. And those might be something more like fear or anxiety, right? And we get so unwilling to sit with those uncomfortable feelings, then we have to substitute something else in its place, in this case, maybe anger. So I read a poem from somebody whose work I think is just really sharp and helpful, named Dana, I think is how she pronounces it, but I'm not sure, Falls. And the final sentence is, you know, the lotus never blooms without sinking roots in the mud. So I think the capacity to bring awareness, mindful, compassionate, non-judging awareness to hard, difficult feelings is extremely important, not so that we get stuck in the mud and mire of those feelings, but so that we can bloom as we come to accepting who we are. And even parts of ourself that are not very attractive. I don't love my defensiveness, but I love me, and I can work with my defensiveness, and I can become more compassionate towards myself as a result of just noticing that that's my go-to default response. And also that actually is what part of what releases me from the defensiveness is that kind of accepting, yep, this is how I tend to respond. And that in itself brings me to that place of being able to find a pause, some space between the reaction I'm having and my more authentic true self, where I can say, oh, it's come up again. I can feel it, right? And it rise. The match has been struck. So there's also something I wanted to mention, and I feel like I might not have time for this, so I don't want to start something I can't finish, if you know what I mean. So let's just talk about mindfulness practices that can be helpful in this context. So at the beginning of the show today, I talked about my experience of reading a lot of Facebook criticism of the vaccine and mask wearing, et cetera, and trying to bring a greater sense of compassion to those responses. Not because I think that they're good responses or even appropriate responses, but I'm not wanting to be in the place of kind of judging those responses, but I want to find that place, and I can notice it when I'm willing to not react with aversion, but to really notice my own reaction to something that's happening, then I can probably find a place of connection. In this particular case, what I noticed reading those reactions, what I remembered was how distrustful I felt of the vaccine research during the Trump administration, right? That I too was very distrustful, that I too was concerned about people's good intentions and their honesty, that I didn't know. And if you'd asked me then, as I said, I don't know that I would have taken the vaccine if during the Trump administration. I don't know what it would have taken to persuade me that it was safe. If I can notice that I too, and be honest with myself, because you know, when I first read those responses, my first thought was not, oh yeah, I felt that distrusting sense too. My first thought was, what's wrong with those people, right? They're wrong about the science, they're wrong about this, they're wrong about that, right? I just was very reactive to it. But when I could slow down and I could let go in a sense of the aversion, I could find in my own experience parallels that allowed me to bring a greater sense of compassion to those responses. And again, I don't know what would persuade people who have those beliefs to change their mind and say wear masks more often or get the vaccine, but I do know that calling them names, demeaning them, diminishing them, which is often, I think, what we do when somebody really disagrees with us and we feel threatened by that disagreement, that's absolutely not going to work. So let's look for a different strategy, if nothing else, on a very pragmatic level. And that's where I think, just to be honest, that I am a very pragmatic person. I think in some ways I've come to mindfulness as much from that sense of pragmatism as anything else. So anyway, I think we're going to wrap up here a little bit. We might be wrapping up a little bit early. So I hope you've been thinking today about what the feeling is that is right below the surface for you. What's the one that you can light a match and those feelings that rise up very quickly? And like my friend and I that I've been talking about today, do those feelings dissipate as quickly as they rise up? Or do they smolder and linger? Can you actually, be like me, make a bad feeling much, much worse by dwelling on it, by thinking about it endlessly, repeating, rehearsing, replaying scenes in your mind so that it becomes very much worse than the original pain that you experienced? And now you're in a place of real suffering. So when we can react with something other than aversion, then we might be able to do something more compassionate, both towards ourselves and towards other people. So I think sometimes when we don't have time for this, but we do today, let's do the breathing exercise one more time. And this time we're going to do Lori Cameron's three deep breaths. This is a breathing exercise that is extremely helpful before you go into a stressful situation. So what the first breath, you just pay attention to the sensation of the air entering and exiting your body. For the second breath, you want to pay attention to any place in your body where you feel tension and relax. And then for the third breath, set your intention. What do you need for the next hour of your life to be present, to be aware and awake and present to whatever's happening inside you and in the world around you. So three deep breaths. First breath, just pay attention to your breathing. Second breath, relax. And third breath, set your intention. You're just noticing how much I did not relax during that second breath. I cheated, I think. So mindfulness is at the heart of my work as a life and communication coach. And if you'd like to learn more about my work, please go to mcguirelifecoach.com or you can email me at maryangelamcguire@gmail.com. That first conversation is free and we'll just talk about your goals. What is it you want to achieve through coaching? And then I'll describe my method. It's an inquiry method, I would say, is the best method, which means there's way to describe it, which is to say, I ask questions and I listen closely and I tend to repeat back to you. Kind of, here's what I hear you saying is at the heart of that. And we'll have a short session so that you can determine if working with me best serves your needs. So you visit my website, mcguirelifecoach.com, or email me at maryangelamcguire@gmail.com and we'll set up a time to talk. So until next week, I hope that you will be curious about your mind, noticing where your mind goes, especially in difficult moments. And most of all, I hope you'll be kind to yourself. So thank you so much for listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and I hope to see you next week. You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Maryangela McGuire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, mcguirelifecoach.com. That's mcguirelifecoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.